Welcome to Lead and Thrive, a monthly segment on the Reminder Remedy podcast focused on career empowerment. I'm Alicia Roebuck, career coach, recruitment leader, and career development enthusiast, and I am your guide through the realms of all things career and overall growth. Join me in exploring the philosophy that drives our mission, cultivating environments where skills and experience are recognized, opportunities are accessible, technology and tools are embraced and incorporated into everyday life, and individuals thrive in careers that align with their passion and purpose. Let's dive into the essence of empowering individuals toward a future of fulfilling, meaningful, and well-compensated work.
And we are back. Welcome back to yet another episode of The Reminder Remedy. I am your host, Alina Conley, and today I am here joined by somebody who should not be unfamiliar face or voice to the show. I have one of my very first life crafting clients, Alicia Roebuck, on the line. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
This is a long time coming, y'all. So yeah. I have been working with Alicia for 3 years. She has trusted me with her life.
Literally.
So I don't know what that says about her. No, I'm just kidding. But we have just made incredible strides in her life. And one of the reasons why I have decided to invite her on for her monthly segment, which you just heard all about, which I'm just, oh my God, I'm so excited. One of the reasons why I wanted to bring her on is because we would get into sessions, and this is come up more frequently, I would say, in the last year, now that she's in her zone of genius. But we have found ourselves in dialogue around the state of work, the state of organizations, what it looks like to finally find what she refers to as mission-driven work. And then really with me having the opportunity to work with her to build her platforms, her content has allowed me to get an understanding of the landscape that can sometimes feel a little bit removed from the space that I'm in, but it's also the space that I want to play in when it comes to serving people. Because as a coach, I would say 95% of the people that come to me, they're coming to me because they want to change. And typically that change starts with their work environment. It starts with finding something that feels purposeful, something that feels like they're contributing to the greater good of the culture, specifically the Black culture, or it's because they feel burnt out, which we're going to talk about today. They feel like they don't belong. They feel like they're tired of dealing with everyday microaggressions. And so they are trying to, whether it's improve their life skills or figure out their purpose, it could also be figuring out how do they close the skills gap. And so my thought process was, it's cool when people can come and get one-on-one coaching like Alicia, but wouldn't it be even more impactful if I could go to the source, right? You can work on yourself all day, but if you work in a toxic culture or an environment that's stale, it can sometimes feel like you're beating your head against the wall. And so with some of Alicia's insight and the dialogues that we've had, I have progressed my career forward by essentially pitching myself a role where I am able to partner with an organization that works with small businesses and organizations and has corporate relationships where we go in and we focus on that leadership development from the inside out. And so thank you for these conversations that we have, because it's really inspired me to go and level up my own career goals. And so I think that what we're going to do here on the show is just going to be so impactful, because this is where we are. We're trying to figure out how do we really craft a life where we can do meaningful work that we love while also creating a life outside of work that we love. So I'm excited to have you.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. I can't say thank you to you enough. I think we've always had just really good connection, like where I can't articulate my points, you always are like there to just reframe or just make it make sense for me. And I'm glad that you've taken some of that as well into your career. I'm like, I've been patiently waiting for this time. And so I'm so glad that you feel empowered to do this work at this point. So I'm excited. It's a privilege to be here and to be amongst these amazing listeners. I hope that what we will do in Lead and Thrive will help people to thrive, frankly. So I'm excited.
Yeah. So before we get into our segment, I first want to just give a little bit of color. And I know I'm going to bring you back on and do a full interview, right? Yes. But I just want to give a little bit of your journey, how we got to this place where you really have fallen into your zone of genius and you're feeling really good about work. So start with our last episode. So our last episode was you just talking about your career, your experiences. Since then, you've left that company. You've gone to yes. another industry. You've now found your ideal industry. Talk to me mm-hmm. about what that journey was like for you.
That episode, I listened back to it this week. That episode was right before the storm. So I was like, at the moment, like really feeling like I was set. And that's when I was placed on this journey, right? So I actually ended up going on leave several times over the last 3 years because of stress, but also like personal losses in my life, all of which have got me to this point of, Alicia, you've got to figure out how to put yourself at the center. So when I first left the first company, I ended up in a similar situation where I was still overworking myself. I had more boundaries, but not enough boundaries. I got into a situation where I had similar management styles. I had never thought about the type of manager that I needed to thrive under, frankly. My dad got sick and I needed to take a pause. And that was the first time I really didn't question pausing. I had taken a leave before, but I didn't question the pause when it was my parent. He actually ended up passing away and then I actually got laid off. And I remember that time because we were still, you know, going through coaching. And I remember you even said, take some time. I know this is crazy and this is a wild time, but take the time. So
I got time off, but I remember specifically I was in the hallway at gymnastics, which I where I'm always at. You told me what happened. Like you called me, okay, I got laid off.
Yeah.
We talked through it, but the only thing that was resonating on my heart was like, I just don't want her to
do it again. Default
and go right back on LinkedIn. Right. You can always find a job, like you're talented. Always. But I didn't even, like, you had gotten a great package. I didn't want your mind to go into this space where you were unable to really process even the last experience, right? Because there have been a lot of fast moving pieces.
Yeah.
And I wanted to just point that out, that it wasn't just take a vacation. It was like, don't even open up your computer to like see what's out there.
Yeah. Don't open up your laptop. And I just... These are the moments, one, to start these processes of coaching before life really hits you, but also when life does hit, having people who know your norm and can see, maybe you need to pause and be able to say that. Because a lot of people were like, oh, what do you think? Alina was one of maybe four people who were like, look, you already know you can get a job. Like, maybe just pause. And so I took that advice to heart. Like from November to February, I didn't touch LinkedIn. Anyone that knows me, you follow me, I am Miss LinkedIn. I do not play. I'm always on it. I'm a recruiter. So it's that's just the notifications are always on. I didn't touch LinkedIn. I didn't think about anything besides what I needed to really reflect on the time. And what I did during those months off was I got very clear. What kind of life do I want to live? I wanted to do acupuncture. I wanted to work out more. I wanted to really hone in on my coaching and my therapy. Everyone knows I love a lot of support, right? So I realized, okay, so those are the things I need to have central. What kind of job do I want now? And it got very clear because I knew when I got on LinkedIn, I was going to do a post to tell people what's up with me and what I needed from them. And so it got very specific of individual contributor, because I had been leading teams for almost 4 years. I was tired. It got down to US centric. Like I needed to focus. Like I really care deeply about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I mostly wanted to do that work in the US. So it was US centric. And then I decided I wanted to do what I called, which I don't know if this is the right way to call it, but mission-based industries, right? So wealth management or financial services, insurance, things that I had recently worked on because of losing a parent, things that were top of mind for me that
but
I was really just-
talking you, when you into. Say mission-based, I want to be clear that she's referring to not necessarily the mission of the industry, even though they say it's their mission. She's referring to her personal mission, right?
My mission.
To when people say, create a mission statement, create a vision statement. she had already defined how she wanted to show up into the world. And so based on that, finding an industry that would open up doors, access, and education to her bigger mission. Okay.
Exactly. Thank you for the clarification, because you always want it. Exactly. Like, if I'm going to be in a 9-to-5 now, it's going to be a multifaceted endeavor for me, right? Mm-hmm. I want to be learning about the things that can help me, my family, my community to thrive, right? Beyond just helping people find meaningful work. So those are my three: US-centric, individual contributor, and Alicia's kind of mission-based viewpoint. And then the most important thing I did for myself was I went through every single manager I'd ever had, and I made a pros and cons list. And I said, okay, for every con, I'm going to rewrite this statement in the positive to make it a pro. And then I used ChatGPT and created questions that would help me assess for these skills in a manager. So I had a list of like 10 questions that I knew I would ask in some format over the process of this manager, of the team members that were on these different teams. I know that I can thrive in any job, but it's who I'm working for that is going to help me to truly move the ball forward. And that was the most clear thing I knew of all of the things I listed was my
manager. It's critical though, right? Because even with entrepreneurship, right? Yeah. You're still working with clients. You're still working with people. And that is one of the things that people sometimes forget is who you work with the most is going to impact your stress levels, your ability to actually find joy in your work. You could be in a role that you love, but if you work with someone who just doesn't click with you, then it will really impact your ability to deliver. So if you don't mind, talk to me about what you discovered, right? So when you did that work, what did you discover in terms of the type of people that you need to work with?
Woo-hoo. Man, one, I knew that I had been doubted in all of my previous, like the last 2 to 3 roles. I had come in the door with people doubting me. I just put a post up recently that says, as soon as I got into the interview, into the meetings, I knew they doubted me. I knew that they were like asking questions that didn't make sense given my experience, given my resume. And it was me who chose to say, I'm going to prove them wrong. You don't want to give me the title that I earned? I'll show you in a year. You're going to give me that title. And I always got the title. I always got the compensation. I got the promotions. I got the stuff. But there was something about everyone doubting me that really caused the misery that I was experiencing, because there's no way you can change their mind. Like, you've already done the work getting to the point. And in my mind, it's what else do I have to show you to let you know that I'm a top tier candidate, a top tier leader, et cetera. There was doubt. And I went up against that doubt. And that was the one thing that I said I was never going to do again. If you don't know who I am based on my experience, my resume, et cetera, we just want to leave it at that. You just don't know it. And you'll have to see it somewhere, maybe on the cover of a magazine, likely on the Reminder Remedy, right? You're going to see me sometime soon, and you're going to remember me, and you're going to remember that doubt. But I'm not going to be the one that's going to prove it in your presence. And so doubt was the biggest
thing. That becomes the mission. Every time you go to work, it's like trying to prove your worth.
Like, I'm already here to do the work. Then there's extra work to prove to you. You're just on defense. So imagine, like, you're constantly coming to work on defense. I never want to experience that again. And so I knew that was a big thing. Like, I had to feel in the interview process that I was valued, that they saw what I could contribute immediately in the interview process. The other piece that I am really specific about is, I don't want someone that is a new person in the role. So I had previously had people who are maybe like 2 years in or a few months in at the company, or new to talent acquisition or new to DEI. And so it was like I had to teach them, and they had doubts and questions about it. This is also not helping me either, because the reason that I need a manager in my mind is to help take the roadblocks out of my way. Let me run the ball. I'm the point guard. Let me run the ball. You play defense, move things out of my way, and I'm going to score. So to have someone that's like asking me for the plays on the, just read the book and leave me alone. So I knew I needed someone that was established in their role in recruitment. and did not have the same aspirations that I have. Mm-hmm. I want to be a thought leader. I've done a lot of that work already. I want to write more. I want to do a lot more of this kind of work. If my manager wants to do the same exact thing, feels like there could be some conflict, right? Or there could be some choosing that has to happen where there are big opportunities that come, they're likely going to get the opportunity, right? So mm-hmm. a part of this was, I asked the question, what are your aspirations mm-hmm. for the next 2, 3, 5 years, right? What do you want to do in your career so that mm-hmm. I have a clear sense of, one, are you playing in my lane? But two, right. how can I help support them in their successes, right? So are there things that I can naturally do to help further their careers, further their aspirations? Something I think that most people don't think about. When you have a good manager and they're doing right by you, do right by them, right? Make mm-hmm. them look good. Take things off their plate that might be easy for you and difficult for them. So those mm-hmm. are the big things, right?
Because like, there are, I mean, and I think that even a manager being able to hear, okay, I got somebody who's in their winning season. They want to do this type of work. They want to see this type right. of change. They may be in a season where they've done that, they're past that, and they yeah. just want to lead good people. They want to use their experience to pour into other people. And it's a great synergy because everybody yeah. wins. But to your yes. point, if we all competed for the same thing, then it's constantly, you shading me, I'm shading you.
We're competing.
That's brilliant because you don't, people are not thinking about that when they go in. They're just thinking about pure leadership styles, but you're not really saying, but where are you in your career and how is where I am going to conflict in our ability to actually hit these personal metrics together?
Absolutely. We got to be together. I don't want to be in your lane. I don't want you to be in my lane. I want us to be running separate races, but also supporting each other in our races. I think that's the yeah. best opportunity because now there's a chance for me to bring my boss in and then she can bring me in, right? Versus we're competing or I'm giving her all of my work and she's just taking it and running with it, right? Like that happens sometimes when you don't take that time to really understand what their goals are. So those are the big things for me. I needed to feel valued from the beginning. I want to understand your ambitions and also just know that you can clear the lane for me. It's because you know who's there, roadblocks, you understand the personalities at the company. You can help me to move as quickly as possible without hopefully running into any issues.
Yeah. Again, we could talk all day about your journey, but yes. I thought that was just something that I wanted to put on people's mind as we go into this mm-hmm. segment, because a mm-hmm. lot of what people won't see from you is the work that you did to get to a place where you can even identify the type of managers you want to work with, the type of teams, the type yeah. of roles, right? Like it was 3 years of work. And so yes. I think that now being on the other side and also having gone through her own coaching certification, you can now take your expertise in talent, mm-hmm. in career, and coach someone who is maybe not working with a coach, considering working with a coach, but really like needing that self-coaching every day. Hopefully every month on this segment, we're giving them the information to then go and further figure out, okay, how do I take this information and then develop myself? And that's Absolutely. The model that I want to give just through the podcast in general. Is I know everybody's not ready for coaching. Shoot, everybody sure. can't afford coaching. Exactly. It is very much an investment. And self-coaching is a thing. So there's yeah. kind of two sides that I'm looking at. It's like the education side of it, right? You get all of this free knowledge here on the podcast. You get free knowledge from the books and different articles that we share. And then eventually when you're ready, when you have the capacity and the resources, you take the information and then you put that into development, right? And that's right. working with somebody or really just taking the time to work on yourself with the information.
All right. Absolutely. So,
all right, let's go into our segment. What do we call this segment?
Lead and thrive deep dive.
What'd you say?
It's our lead and thrive deep dive. We're going deep into breath.
Yes. I'm gonna add some sound effects. We're going into the lead and thrive.
For our first edition of Lead and Thrive Deep Dive, we're talking all things burnout. Burnout is a syndrome conceptualized as resulting from chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. It is characterized by 3 dimensions, feelings of energy depletion or exhaustion, increased mental distance from one's job, and reduced professional efficacy. Burnout refers specifically to phenomena in the occupation or work context. Even with the uptick in hybrid and remote working options, an April 2022 survey by ADP Research Institute showed that employees worked 8.5 hours of unpaid overtime each week compared to 7.3 hours before the pandemic. We know that employees are also having to deal with enormous cost of living pressures, as well as the ongoing childcare crisis. A May 2022 report from the Ohio State University showed 66% of U.S. working parents meet the criteria for burnout. Now, burnout isn't just depression by another name. Studies find a clear distinction between the two, though they are not mutually exclusive. Burnout is work-focused and results in resentment directed outward towards the workplace or job rather than inward. Women are more likely to experience burnout from work than men because they have less authority in the workplace. Black women frequently struggle with microaggressions, a lack of opportunities, and the pressure to be constantly on. New scientific research has demonstrated the massive cognitive load on those who are financially insecure. Living in poverty is akin to losing 13 IQ points. Millions of millennial Americans live in poverty. Millions of others straddle the line, getting by but barely so, often working contingent jobs with nothing left over for the sort of security blanket that could lighten that cognitive load. To be impoverished is to have very little mental bandwidth to make decisions. And while organizations are now seeing their impact on burnout, there is still a need for us as a collective to decide if the sacrifices that put us at risk of burnout are worth making for the sake of our jobs and careers. While I was researching how someone can get to the point of burnout, and yes, I have been by definition there myself on more than one occasion, I found an article by Candy Weens titled, "Your Burnout is Trying to Tell You Something," for the Harvard Business Review. In the article, Candy shares 5 ways that you can end up in burnout. The first, you've outgrown your role. The second, this is not what you signed up for. Third, you're expected to over-index on work. The fourth, your work culture does not align with your values. And fifth, your workplace is toxic. I will jump back in with Alina to talk through all these scenarios and share the provided solutions for each scenario as well. Let's jump right in.
All right. So you all had the opportunity to listen to just some of the facts on burnout. And hopefully, as we find it a little bit more, you have a clear understanding of what it is and what it isn't. I think that something that stood out in what you shared was burnout isn't depression. And we know that depression is its own category. Anxiety is its own category. Social anxiety is its own category.
Absolutely.
But the main thing to recognize with burnout is that this specifically has to do with the domain of work. And so when you look at those statistics, I think that many of us at some point have experienced it, because it really takes an undoing to not be in it, right? Now, coming out of the pandemic, which we saw from your research, really made burnout even worse because there was no turning it off.
Nope.
But then it's also, most of us are still in some capacity working in remote environments. So it is easy to just throw yourself into work nine to five, but then 24/7. Mm-hmm. And so I want to spend some time with you going a little bit deeper on what you brought up. I thought it was an amazing article from Kenny Wines, the one around your burnout is trying to tell you something. And I think it's hilarious that we always go to the HBR research. Like, I just,
we are the, we need a little, yeah. Yeah. Wait, yes.
We're talking about the Harvard Business Review. We were in a workshop the other day, and I realized that every single case study, example, and video that I gave was a Harvard study. At this point, Harvard, just bring us in.
We can bring us in. We are ready. We are readers.
Okay. So the first thing that he mentioned in 5 ways that you can end burnout or end up in burnout was that you've outgrown your role. So talk to us about what that looks like.
So this is an interesting one, because we typically see people burn out because of how much work they're doing, but it can actually be the opposite, where you're feeling chronically underutilized, right? Or the way that you're working is just in your mind being like used in the wrong context. And I think this goes back to what we talk a lot about. You talked about in your session as well, is honoring the season you're in. So when we get these jobs and we stay in them for 2 and 3+ years, what we set out in the role will evolve, right? Like, your needs will change year over year. Your contributions will likely need to change, right? Your work setup might change. So you might find yourself looking back and saying, this is my dream job. How am I now here feeling this way about this work? And so this particular scenario calls for a lot of reflection, right? It's what are your aspirations, right? What kind of manager do you want to work for? What are the new things you want to contribute in your work life? What kind of company do you want to work for? What industries are calling you? So this is just a specific case of it may be time to start looking, right? Whether that's internally or externally. But the biggest part of this is going to be acknowledging what's missing. What are you looking to do? What would make your work feel more energizing? So that's the self-reflection piece that this calls for.
Yeah, I think that the you've outgrown your role is something that is going to sting for a lot of people because, ooh, okay, yeah, I know that, duh, but I ain't going nowhere. Like, I need this check. Okay. And something that I also have found helpful, not in my own, I guess for me, it's not outgrowing a role. It's just sometimes feeling like certain aspects of my roles are beneath me, right?
Yeah. So
I constantly was like being tagged to do surveys and create the type form for every event.
Yeah.
And really any tech tool, right? It was since our tech girl. And so I'm like, 90% of what I'm doing for y'all is like creating type forms. And so it was, I almost started to feel some level of resentment for that task because I'm like, come on, y'all could be utilizing me a little differently.
Absolutely.
And so what I did was I implored my own coaching, which is I do an exercise, and I've done this with my internal team, and something called job crafting. So it's a subset of the life crafting model. But a lot of time in job crafting is not necessarily just completely going and getting a new job, because we know that, especially depending on the marketplace, the economy is not a flip of the switch. You know, right. Sometimes it could take an entire year to even get an interview.
Exactly.
But with job crafting, you're looking at your interests, you're looking at people that you want to work with, the type of tasks that you want to do. And then you're having the conversations with all of the stakeholders to figure out, how can I reshuffle some of my day to day? How can I contribute a little bit differently? Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was also, like you said, the reflection piece of it. And I just had to put on my big girl pants and say, girl, everything is not going to be fucking fun. Like, it's just not. Even though I'm like a super, oh my gosh, find what you love. I think Cal Newport, I love me some Cal. He just straight up said, just because it's your passion doesn't mean that it's going to be fun every day. There's going to be things that align with the type of work that you are passionate about that are just going to be grunt work. And I tell this to my interns, I'm like, listen, you're a visionary. You love creating curriculum and programming just like me. Mm-hmm. When you create a program, the number one thing that you need to run a successful program is you need feedback, which means you need a survey, which means you're going to be the type form girl. So I think that the moment that I had that reframe of, okay, stop looking at the task and more so look at, okay, ultimately my goal is to be a master facilitator and trainer. One of the things that I do to get there is feedback, right? And so what that looks like is I have to do surveys, because then when I'm doing my impact report, I need to be able to show my data. So that really helped me to think differently about different roles. And I think that strategically you start crafting, okay, how can I get some people to do these things? How can I create templates where I'm not having to do it every time to burn myself out? But now I have this better outlook on, okay, this does align with the long-term goals, so I'm going to snap out of it. But if it's not, then you can, that's when you really do have to have that conversation with yourself and say, okay, there's nothing left for me here.
And there's some excitement in that. It's exciting to figure out what could be next for you. It's the only time you get to play in the sandbox of it. Like, when you know your career path is pretty set in stone, it's like, all right, I need to go to this next step. There's no creativity. We just know what's next. I always say it can be a fun experience to think big about what you want. Those are those moments where you can actually go a little bit more into the wants versus like the I'm going to go from director to VP. Mm-hmm. That looks like this to that is vanilla. You never know where your actual interest will come in. So mm-hmm. I say sometimes just think about having a little fun with it. I will also call out that LinkedIn is great at, if you type in like your current role, it will feed you other positions as well or other keywords. So mm-hmm. you can also think about, are there other roles internally? Are there other things in these other roles that you can add to your plate and mm-hmm. say, okay, I'm not going to change my role to your point, but mm-hmm. I'm going to add these five things for the betterment of this team and pitch that to your boss. And maybe there's a little bit of extra dollars in there for you. So you can figure out a few different ways to make this work, but it's definitely
something that came to mind when I think about another role. And when I say role, I do recognize that it's different, right? Because I'm a contract worker for most. So I do have a little bit more confidence when I'm making these ads because it's okay. Technically, I'm my own whatever.
Yeah,
so I don't want to overshadow what may feel like, okay, Alina, you have a little bit more flexibility, but not really. If you're on a project and it's a small team, like it is what it is. So what I was going to say is there was a role that I felt like there are parts of this that I really like and there are parts mm-hmm. that I really don't like. And the parts that I really don't like, I think could be another role because honestly, there's just too much work for me. Yep. I don't want to give up the role because yep. I like these pieces of it. And so what my manager, for lack of a better word, said to me, she hates when I call her my manager. What my partner basically said for me was to, okay, well, draft a role for yep. that you would want to hire for. Draft what somebody else that could support you could do, and then draft what you would do if you're no longer doing that role. And so mm-hmm. I basically just split the role in half. And we were able to eventually find the cost center and the role and the programming to get that person. And so that made it where I didn't have to give up the whole role and I was still employed. Mm-hmm. And now I don't feel overwhelmed because I've crafted something that's a little bit more manageable.
And you can do that right in ChatGPT.
Look, I think I did that exercise maybe a couple of months right before ChatGPT came
out. Well, I'm not writing a thing, okay? I'm not writing a thing. It's
my whole life. Like, I always think about
game ChatGPT changer.
As, have you seen Sex and the City 2?
Yes.
In Dubai? So mm-hmm. you know that scene where Charlotte and Miranda, I think they're at the bar. And then she's basically talking about the nanny and the nanny was yes. like, wearing the bra.
Yes.
It was like, and Samantha's talking about my nanny and how he may be looking at her, but I can't get rid of the nanny. And she's just like thought of getting rid of the nanny. It's yes. just, that is how I feel about ChatGPT. Every time I see yes. something on the news where they're considering getting rid of this person and potentially shutting down my baby, I'm like, I'm going to just tell y'all now. Just take me. If you're going to take me.
I just had to log in today. I was like, what if I tried to log in one day and I couldn't log in? Girl. I really don't know what I would do. I hope they're not listening.
Up so much mind, you know.
Yes.
Anyways, we could get on a whole tangent.
Okay. That'll be a whole, that's a whole other segment, which is definitely coming soon.
It's coming. Yeah. Okay, so the second one was, this is not what you signed up for. And that's so funny because I just was talking to my friend, Laura, who I'm her leadership development person. And we've had a few people already, this ain't going to work. It's okay, cool.
You told me it but would be.
How does that lead to burnout if you keep going?
Yeah, so it can lead to distrust, disengagement, compromise performance, right? People get excited about the work that's in front of them, the work that's ahead of them. Yeah. Even when you ask the right questions and inquire about the support and the schedule, to get there and see you've been sold like a false bill of goods it takes the wind out of you, right? And so mm-hmm. for those who do stay, it's you lack trust. You may just slack off. You may start looking for something else, which everyone has that swirling list of thoughts, like, I'm really leaving. I just got here. And so and to be clear, this is probably one of the most frequent causes of burnout. It's unfortunate because you hope that you're coming in and you're going to be successful. So I think there's a additional just sadness that comes with this particular scenario. What they do share, though, is pinpointing exactly where there's a disconnect, right? Do you not have enough support? Are they putting tasks on your plate that they didn't initially shared with you in the conversations during the interview process, right? That's why I say always keep a copy of your job description, put it in a Google document somewhere for a few different reasons, but for this reason especially, you're going to refer back to that job description and pull out objectives that align with that description and have a very specific conversation with your manager and with HR about what the role was listed as and how it's evolved. And get a little clarity around why things have changed, because again, businesses are always evolving, but that's a way for you to get back to hopefully the things that are most important to you. And if
how do
not,
you feel like that happens though? Like
all the time. People,
but why is it just like people write fake job descriptions or what?
No, I don't think it's that. I think that people don't always pay as much attention to the description relative to the current state of their business. Right. So if you're hiring the same jobs every year, same role, same team, it's like, let's just put the job description up. Right. Mm-hmm. Not realizing we had that created in 2020. It's 2024. Mm-hmm. We have all new objectives for the company. We no longer have this team or this person left. We have a new person. So the things we could rely on that person for, this person's new and they no longer can support the team the way that person was, right? Like you take a lot of things for granted sometimes, right? That things are operating the way they've always operated and that we just haven't seen them. Even right now, we know 85% of people are considering leaving their jobs. So more than ever, this scenario could come up more and more because if your work hinged on someone contributing this other piece of the pie and they leave and now they have to be backfilled, that will inevitably change the structure of that business, the structure of what's happening, right? And that's why I think getting back to the job description, asking about the objectives, instead of just assuming that people are like out to get you, ask the question, hey, what's going on that these things are no longer in place, right? Your manager will likely say, girl, it's crazy over there, right? This is what's happening. And now you can have a perspective of, okay, this one or two things that I was really excited to come out of the gate with. What do you think if we pause until Q2 or Q3 to do that work? In the meantime, what about me doing more of this other work, right? Re-clarify your objectives with your manager and find the opportunities to highlight the things that you are most excited about. And see if they're open to you moving some things around, right? I think a lot of times we just assume the worst versus having the conversation. And again, if you've done the due diligence on your manager, then you hopefully will have someone that you feel you can trust and that will help guide you through this shift.
Okay, that's good. So this is helpful, really helpful in thinking about just the conversations and the redirects, right? Because I don't want to come off as, okay, just do this and things will be fixed. Like it is very temperamental when it comes to relationships and how to finesse these things. And so I hope that some of these scripts are helpful. Now, the third thing that they mentioned was that you're expected to over-index on work. First of all, the term over-index, I've listened to a podcast where they literally say the words over index like 10 times. I'm like, that's y'all version of, because they say, yeah, over thing on. I'm like, oh my God. Anyways, I digress. So when you're expected to over index on work, what does that even mean, Chad?
Yeah, you're just always on. You're expected to always be on. So even when you're not physically like in the office, you're expected to respond to emails and IMs and there's no such thing as like work hours. They all just run together. What are the weekends, right? I'm on vacation, but I'll take a call or seven. And that typically, that shows up a lot with how our managers lead. They show you through what they do when they're off. When I was a leader, I made very certain, like I would delete the apps off my phone because I knew I didn't want to make my team feel like when they were on vacation, they had to be checking. So it's a very specific effort. Now, that's not to say if things are due or there's like very important things that are happening, depending on the level, because there are leaders on this call and on this podcast. It's not to say you can't be on when you need to be, right? But this is like consistently not respecting your hours, not respecting your time. And the way you do this, and this is something that's also very personal, you've got to set boundaries from the beginning, right? Like when we talk about with kids, The second you say no and it becomes a yes, now it's just yes from now on, right? Mm-hmm. So when you find that people are responding to you after hours, you respond during their work hours, right? And you can even say to them, hey, like, what's the best time for us to communicate? Like, for me, it's during these hours. I noticed you sent some notes yesterday. Were you expecting me to respond during that time? Or like, what was the expectation? And it's not something that you have to be combative about. It's just asking the question, right? For a lot of people, there are meetings all day. So the only time they get a chance to respond is after they've had dinner. And most will say, yeah, please just ignore that. It's like my stream of consciousness going off, right? We've all been victim of that. Oh, I just wanted to get this out before I forgot. So those are easy ways you can ask the questions. Now, if it becomes something where the boundaries aren't being respected, I would definitely put something in writing around how you're going to be accessible. I would mark my work hours on my calendar. So like, you can't even book time with me. You can even do out of office after certain hours, right? Depending on how extreme you've got to go, there are ways and methods to get your point across. And this, again, may not be what you signed up for. So you need to think through what your path forward looks like, given the scenario.
So my question to that is, when we think about American culture, right? Like, especially like when I was in the workplace and I worked in banking, and it was just known. It didn't even have to be said, or it was even said, these are the hours. You're going to be here at 6, you're going to be here till midnight. And I better see an email from that time forward, right? Give me something to let me know you was in here all night. So I think that there are some work environments where it's just known. And if you know that you're not in that season, it is time to look for something else. However, I do, my concern is when you have experience in an industry, and the industry by nature over indexes in terms of people just work. This is their life. I've had clients, and this, I've seen this a lot with clients who work with global teams. They're trying to life craft and do other things, but they almost have to be on all day because by the time it's time for them to go to sleep, their teams in Hong Kong are waking up or whatever, right? And so when it comes to setting the boundaries for international teams, it's a little bit more challenging. Or it's one of those things, especially with small businesses where you don't have a ton, like you, it's not, oh, get somebody else to do it, such as on vacation. It's like, I'm on vacation, it's not getting done because there is no other me. It feels like you can't necessarily do that. And so it becomes a constant, okay, this is not, I'll just give an example. I had a client who, she pretty much got to a point where she realized, like, this is just not working out. Like, I want more personal time. I want to have a baby. I want to do this. I want to do that. But there's really no real wiggle room. Like, there's, I'm putting my email. I'm telling them, stop calling me. They're going to still email me. I'm going to pretend like I'm not going to check it. I'm going to check it. And now I'm at dinner thinking about it. Right. So it's hypothetically, you're putting in the work, like the tips that your coach tell you to do, but it's not really helping your well-being. What would you say when it's just, I don't want to go without a job, but I also can't, this is not sustainable. Like, how do you finally just make a choice?
I think for one, I think the opportunity can be to consider what other options could be available within your industry. So what I found, especially post-pandemic, employers are looking to make things more approachable for employees, right? So just because your company exists in this industry doesn't mean that the same kind of work environment exists at every other company, right? Get curious, ask around, what are the other groups in your industry doing, right? What are the other benefits that exist within that industry as a first step to utilize your transferable skills and maybe go to another company in the same industry, right? The other option is, what are the transferable skills you can take to another industry? For example, a lot of lawyers recently have talked about shifting outside of practicing law. And within various industries, there are always a need for people who can handle the legal work of the organization. Like within insurance, there's all kinds of ways to pivot from working in legal to claims departments and underwriting departments, just given the legal ramifications of that industry and those services. So it's time to look at transferable skills. And I know that's daunting, but that's where the innovation happens. So I grew up in media and TV data mostly. And if you look at the heads of these organizations, it's no longer just a TV organization. It's a digital organization. They're pulling in the people that have no TV experience in a lot of ways, but understand streaming, but right, understand these other ways of monetization for content. And honestly, there's a premium for those
experiences. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a premium in like an outside perspective.
They need it. It's going to help them to grow and be competitive, right? And so that's what I have, and we've seen a lot of that, right? We've seen a lot of those industries, right? Like recently they talked about the shortage of accountants and auditors, right? Mm-hmm. That's because we all know we went to FAMU and a lot of our friends are accountants and auditors, and busy season, remember all our friends in busy season? Like you don't hear from them, you don't see them, right?
Yeah.
Well, now we're seeing a lot of those individuals take their talents to consulting, take their talents mm-hmm. to other areas of their business or other industries overall to find more balance, right? And so mm-hmm. I do find that in these instances, you can find other companies in that industry that maybe aren't as strict or conservative to that industry that you can maybe go into or see where you can take your talents and find somewhere else where, again, you can be valued and hopefully get some of those objectives fulfilled within your list. That's what I look at.
As I'm listening to you, one of the things that is coming to mind is mm-hmm. we have, I would say that the average listener for my show is like 30 to 45, right?
Got it.
And I would say pretty much upper management at this point.
Okay.
We're looking at almost 15 to 20 years experience. So there are some that are looking to change careers, potentially burnt out, but many of them do have teams.
Mm-hmm.
And what I also, in addition to individuals coming because they're experiencing burnout, what I also have heard is I want to create culture that allows people to thrive on my team without burnout, right? So it's almost mm-hmm. from that managerial and organizational development standpoint.
Yeah.
Do you have any outlook on, if I'm listening to this, I personally am not in a season of burnout. I've been there, but I can see that some of my team members are, my junior yeah. team members are, because we have demands in the organization. Thus, mm-hmm. it's making me a little bit burnt out because I'm stressed because of what they have to do all night. So mm-hmm. from, I know that you work with a lot of senior management I in do. Developing how you all are innovating in this time. What is something mm-hmm. that a manager who sees their team over-indexing can do to support?
One is having a conversation with that individual about their objectives personally and professionally. You start there because your team, they have perspectives on what they want to accomplish and what they want to contribute. So you want to start with understanding that and hearing that directly from them so that they can feel heard and seen. And then the article actually points to some really interesting perspectives, which I think is great. It's the three D's. It's delegate, de-emphasize, or discontinue, right? So when you think about the personal goals of each individual team member, those inevitably ladder up to your team goals, ladder up to your organization goals, right? Mm-hmm. So your organization goals are not changing, but your team goals might need to, right? I love when you talk about like the law of three. If you got 10 objectives mm-hmm. for the team, let's tighten it up a little bit, right? Maybe it needs to be six. Maybe we can parking lot that one objective till 2025, given the change and maybe the resources for your organization or for your team, right? I think that if you think about those pieces, then you can effectively delegate, de-emphasize, or discontinue, right? But it needs to start with what are the absolute things that we need to accomplish to be successful as a team? Mm-hmm. What are the individual things that my teams are saying that they want to do? So the things that might be on one person's plate might be a personal objective for the other person. You can delegate that differently, right? The things that aren't really a priority for the year, let's de-emphasize and say maybe Q4, we'll start to talk about it again and go into 2025. And then the thing that we came up with in 2020, when in January 2020, that's no longer even relevant anymore. Let's just discontinue that and just say, hey, that has evolved into this other thing, this other area. Let's take it off our plate altogether.
Yeah. No, that's super effective. We'll have to put those three D's in the show notes because yes. I think that having that framework is important because it does get to a place where this is the thing that I personally am trying to develop in my skill set is how do I continue to develop myself mm-hmm. as an individual, as a leader, but also using my skills to then develop other people.
Absolutely.
And I think that is something that for many of us in organizations, we don't really necessarily get to that point because mm-hmm. we're like, all right, I'm going to just be an individual contributor because it's too much.
Tired.
But I also, especially if you're dealing with burnout, so I'm already like doing too much work.
Yep.
But for those of us who are trying to shift cultures and corporations and do business differently, we realize, okay, I seem to have skill sets that could change the narrative in this workplace.
Mm-hmm.
I want to contribute, but I need to understand the best way to do that, right? So even for me as an entrepreneur that works with organizations or that collaborates with other business owners,
mm-hmm.
If I'm presented with a proposal and they're saying, okay, Alina, we want you to do this part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I have to have a full understanding of what is the ultimate objective.
Absolutely.
Don't just give me a piece of the pie when you tell me the overall goal, because number one, I'm going to be able to effectively contribute to that, but then I can also delegate to my team the priorities based off of how our deadlines and the bigger goals for whatever the group partnership is. I think that those are super helpful. Okay. Learning a lot. Fourth, he talks about how your work culture does not align with your values. And this is our sweet spot. But what? Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So the mismatch causes stress and turmoil because it threatens you at a fundamental place, like your identity.
At your core.
Right. Yeah. And so this one is really important. I think the biggest thing is like having a conversation with your leadership, voicing your concerns, looking for the proper channels to voice your concerns, right? I think there are typically phone lines you can call, like to just call out what's happening. But mm-hmm. really, this is a place where if you want to stay, you're going to have to really do your best to call out the things that are causing you stress, that are misaligned, and figure out if there are other departments, groups, et cetera, that you can find solace within. But this one for me is I got to figure out somewhere else I can go because there's not typically a great outcome in staying in these kinds of places. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest piece here is also figuring out like how quickly your exit strategy can be put into motion, which I know is not the easiest way to think about this, but it could be. A lot of times, one of the things I've heard about with this kind of taxing environment is leaves. There are leave options for you.
Yeah.
If you need to consult your physician and just speak to the stress of it on, you can absolutely look into a leave. But this for me is one where you should, as quickly as possible, alert the proper people, let them know, talk to your doctor, make sure you're taking care of yourself and figuring out your exit strategy.
Yeah. I can think about a couple of clients, but one in particular comes to mind where she was essentially working for a religious organization that kind of is, oh, I'm working for this Christian organization. So I'm assuming that these fundamental beliefs about how people, women should be treated are there.
Yeah.
And then the moment that she had a child and realized even their maternity leave policy or the things that they have in place for parents, a parental leave, were just non-existent. Like it was like super short maternity leave. It was, the insurance was just like poor quality. And it's like, how can you support all of these things, right? In policy and politics, and even in your religious organization, but the people that are here that you're fundamentally able to touch you are not mm-hmm. showing up for them in your work policies.
Yeah.
And so yeah. it made it very challenging for her because she was dealing with some level of postpartum. She was already dealing yeah. with anxiety and stress. Now her child had whatever things that was requiring multiple doctor's appointments, just what newborns require, right?
Yeah.
And so for you to ask me to come back, knowing that I got to do all of this, or not yeah. even come back into the office, right? So it was like, okay, I came on, I was hybrid. I didn't have to come in as often. Now you all are saying that fundamentally you believe that people should be in the office. And it's like, why? Nothing that we doing that we're doing requires us to be here set 5 days a week. So now y'all are just exhibiting control. And so again, it just became one of those things where I thought I was signing up for an organization, a nonprofit or whatever that's supporting this mission. And maybe they are to some degree doing their mission in the world, but how it's reflected in how they treat their employees says otherwise. Yeah. And so that's something to me that's those are adult conversations because it's
those are
like,
the biggest. Hey,
you know, like I've had people who are like, listen, my work is not fun right now in this season, but they pay me to have kids. Like I still get paid. Yeah. I got great benefits. So I'm staying. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. it's like, you have to figure out like in this season, what do I value? Do I value hybrid work? Do I value benefits? Do I value working with a manager who has kids who, if I call and say little Johnny has a cold, they're not going to judge me. That does not align. It's just impossible, in my opinion.
And that's why I say, like, you alert the proper people because in some cases there are repercussions. Like, some people don't yeah. understand the policy. So there could be repercussions. A lot of times, like, I always say, we always think, oh, this company is not great. It could be the one person mm-hmm. that you yeah. work with who's not right. in line with what's going on. So, like, I always say, take the proper channels to alert the proper people who can say, actually, you should get this, or you should have this flexibility, or yeah, you know what? Work with me going forward kind of thing. So I do think like starting there to try to salvage it, because I empathize so much. We've all been there where this is not the time for me yeah. to have you to go through anything to else.
I think that's a good strategy yeah. because that is actually what ended up happening. She escalated what yeah. she was dealing with her manager to HR. And HR was like, oh, no, you can use FMLA, you can use this. And she ended up getting extended pay leave. And so I think that to your point, there are a lot of people in leadership and management that just don't know what is written. Okay.
You never know.
All right,
yeah.
let's go on to our last one, which is the unfortunate cause of burnout for many people, and that is that your workplace is toxic.
Yeah. So it talks about McKinsey's Health Institute found that the single biggest driver of negative employee outcomes is toxic work behavior. And toxic refers to behaviors that leave you feeling belittled, disrespected, intimidated, unsafe, or undermined. And at work, it can look like harassment, unfair treatment, cutthroat competition, manipulation, gossiping, gaslighting, unethical behavior, or abusive management. So that's like a common driver of negative outcomes. It even speaks to if you are in a toxic, you know, environment, you're 8 times more likely to experience burnout. And burnout employees were 6 times more likely to quit within 3 to 6 months. It's really a tough place to be in. And a lot of what they share is don't waste your time trying to advocate for change, right? Like mm-hmm. in that kind of environment, like your safety, your mental health is the primary thing, right? And the difference between the last one and this one are there are maybe some confusions around the benefits, or it could be like a one-off thing, or maybe there's just some things that you can, it hits you to your core, but it's something that if you're in another group or maybe you have some clarity around the benefits, it would help. This environment, there's just no saving.
Everybody's talking to it.
Put your girl mask on and save yourself, honey. This is where it's, and that's why I wanted to clarify what toxic means. Yeah. These are things that are truly putting you in a place where you have to prioritize yourself.
Yeah.
And again,
now that I think about like why I ended up ultimately leaving, it was toxic. Like yeah. I was literally crying
yeah.
in the bathroom every day my first year. And heartbreaking. I was like, this shit is crazy. I'm dealing with somebody who could care less about me as a human.
Yeah.
He embarrasses me. He puts me to shame. It was toxic as hell. And I think, again, going back to, okay, you hear these horror stories, I felt like I put myself in that situation.
Yeah.
But then once I realized, oh, I'm literally destroying my health, right? Yeah. Once I dealt with the ulcers in my stomach, the reflux, and had to end up getting all, I'm like, I'm 26 years old. Like, why? And immediately went and started having conversations. I think it might have been a week after my doctor's appointment. And I was like, I'm finding something else here because this one person is not going to ruin my experience at this firm. Exactly. I know that this firm stands for something better. I know that this team might not be a good fit, and it stings my ego because it is a winning, popular team.
Yeah.
But like, I got to find something that's going to align with like how I move.
And that's all you can do is figure out how to limit your exposure to these individuals. Yeah. Hopefully that's within the organization. But again, if you're feeling like it's something that's tolerated in this organization, you will have to figure out, again, an exit strategy and leave. But it's definitely something that you should not blame yourself for, right? Mm-hmm. No one deserves or signs up to be treated that way. Yeah. Even in your most ambitious of seasons, which I think for me, this resonates a lot. In my ambitious season, I was like, do whatever, say it's whatever, I don't care. Yeah. I'll just...
Oh, you were saying whatever you, they do. Yeah.
Whatever you do, I'll just figure it out, right? That was me in my ambitious season. And a lot of the things that I did put up with, there were aspects of toxicity in different environments that I was in. And I just took it on the chin as something that I should do. And in hindsight, I never deserved that. I never signed up for that. So as much as you may be feeling that way, feeling ambitious, it's critically important to understand the longevity, right? You think about health. Will you survive however many more years in this environment, right? Like health-wise. And is that worth it? Is this career or job worth your health? And that's a personal question you have to answer for yourself.
And I think that, I don't know how many of you all have read The Body Keeps Score. We talked a little bit about this in one of our most recent episodes, but we talk about how one time, two times, three times, it could feel like, oh, I'll just ignore it. But what's really happening is that the body is storing it each time. So then over time, it looks like cancer. It looks like high blood pressure. It looks like ulcers. It looks like acid reflux. The next thing you know, you have a surgery like me because I done messed up my esophagus because my acid is not reproducing because I got too much cortisol, too much stress.
Literally.
Oh, I know which episode it was. It hasn't come out yet. It was the gut health one. But in my gut health episode, I explained my work environment. I forgot. These two episodes are actually connected. I'm going to have to link them. But I explained the exact environment that I was just telling you about, the toxic one. Because I was like, this is where my gut challenges started. And I was like having an aha moment. Oh, it was the job. Like the job. Yeah. And I left my corporate job in 2023. So 11 years out. So at my 10-year anniversary of leaving my job, I end up having to have surgery for some trauma that happened a decade earlier.
And that's, I've dealt with chronic stress. I went to the hospital for heart palpitations. I've literally had to retrain my body to hear and feel the alerts that were going off because I was constantly traveling, constantly commuting, constantly in meetings, right? Like these are the things that were choices that I made for my ambition to get that promotion, to get there. And it's just, for me, looking back, it wasn't worth it. Now that I'm here, I'm choosing a different path, a different outcome. But I completely empathize with people who are in that season. Look, I'll just do whatever I have to do. I'll take on the toxic workplace to get the check. I get it. And I empathize with you. I just hope that you can limit your exposure to those toxic behaviors, those toxic individuals, and eventually have your exit strategy in place so that you do have a way to get what you need through experience and move on.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to bring it all home. In the article, the guy who wrote it started off by saying, it's not you, it's your job. And I love that because we assume, oh, there are things I'm just not good enough, or this is just what it is. And it's, no, it doesn't have to be this way. But no. To your point, if you choose in this season, you just gonna ride it out, like move through it, being able to have awareness around this is what's causing it, and then mm-hmm. start to undo some of the things step by step, whether that's creating boundaries, looking mm-hmm. into your FMLA plan, yep. getting on a new team, even just having the language to support it, right? Like if you're just going to therapy and you're able to talk through it and release it, right? Because that's the other yep. thing is that we store so much of the experiences that then becomes the issue. So being able to release yes. it could also do it. So
yeah, Alicia, that's the success management piece there, like successfully okay. managing these experiences. Burnout okay. happens when you are not successfully managing mm-hmm. these things, right? So some people could be in these environments and be fine, right? Because they mm-hmm. are successfully managing these things. Okay. And I think that's a distinction. If you are in these environments and they are crazy and you're feeling okay or not feeling exhaustion or mental distance and dissatisfaction, and you're feeling like you're having these achievements, you feel good, you're successfully navigating these spaces, mm-hmm. right? And so if for some reason you are not, I think taking a page out of this experience that we've just had and talking through this, make sure you have a doctor that if you need to go on leave, they can support you. I say mm-hmm. this to everyone, and I would be remiss if I didn't say it here. While you are feeling your best, talk to your doctor about what could happen if you, for some reason, start not feeling like your best. Mm-hmm. Can they support you? Have they supported other individuals who have dealt with leave or need leave? What does that look like? Familiarize yourself with your sections of the employee handbook. Make sure your spouses or partners have access to those documents as well, right? For some reason, you can't operate on your own. Who's going to be able to help you with this process, right? And I know it's like an extreme version, but there are so many cases where we see individuals who really just, you cannot function. You cannot take the steps to figure out the doctor or even figure out what questions to ask, right? Do it when you're feeling your best. In the month of January, as we near the end, the biggest thing you can do for yourself is, like we said, check in with your objectives. What season are you in? But proactively put things in place for yourself if for some reason you start to experience burnout. The worst feeling is, on top of the exhaustion and the burnout feelings from work, now you got to find a doctor. Now you got to read your documentations. You don't want to talk to HR at this point. You want to don't talk to anyone, right? So do that stuff now. Right. I can't say that enough. Luckily, when I went on my leaves, I already knew who I was working with. I already had experience from other people leveraging that same person. We have similar doctors. Mm-hmm. And I was able to go right in and do what was needed. And it was the best thing I've ever experienced, having mm-hmm. someone in that moment be like, I see you. I got you. Yeah. Let's do it.
Not, oh, you're fine.
You sure? I've never met you before. So what's your baseline for exhaustion? Now we're doing this? Now I'm going to do baselines on exhaustion? Absolutely not.
I think that's amazing advice. By the time you get there, it's too late. It's too late. You just barely surviving.
And I feel for those people. I feel for them.
Well, this has been a great first episode. I have really enjoyed exploring this. You are such a eloquent conversationalist. In all things, but in particular in this space of career development. So everyone tuned in, took a ton of notes. We'll put all of the things that we referenced in the show notes. Alicia will be with us every month. Yeah. But she is also available online. Alicia, can you share with them how they can follow you?
Yes, I am the Alicia, Alicia, Roebuck, Roebuck on Instagram, and Career Conversations for the Culture on TikTok. One other thing that we're going to give you as a resource that I think we both took the quiz.
Oh, yeah.
There's a burnout quiz that this author provides. It takes like maybe 3 minutes, but it tells you like if you are in a state of burnout or not. Mm-hmm. And it also gives you resources to help you navigate through this process. So you'll see those in the show notes. Take the quiz, tap in and see where things stand for you. But I am Alicia Roebuck and I'll be here every month with Lead and Thrive. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm appreciative to your listeners. I want to hear more from you all about topics that are top of mind for you. We just couldn't ignore burnout. It was like just something that's just swirling around us all around in the media, et cetera. So this was a big topic for us, but whatever you guys think is important for future conversations, let us know. I love doing this kind of research.
Yes, definitely. Feel free to email us at coaching@thereminderremedy.com and we will get your questions answered.
Yeah.
All right. Until then, we'll see you on the other side.
See you later.
Thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of The Reminder Remedy. If you haven't already, be sure to follow us on Instagram at The Reminder Remedy, as well as my personal page at Alina Conley, and check out our latest workshops and resources at The Reminder Remedy.